So, without further ado, I want to hand over to Alaska Rogers.
Thanks, Julian. I'm going to kind of dive straight in, and hopefully what I do will become clear over the course of what I plan to talk about. Sometimes I call what I do the daily practice of map making. This is a sort of homage to Gerhard Richter and my dad. Richter's collection of writings was called, of course, the daily practice of painting. And that's exactly what my dad does. He paints every day. He's an artist. I wonder, as I'm sitting writing this, because I wrote this before I'm saying it out loud, if this aspect of my practice attracted me because I wanted to emulate my father's diligence. He does it every day. This is something he does every day. I can say that the big difference between myself and my dad is that he has hardly ever done anything else to earn money than painting. I have to maintain this practice alongside a very demanding schedule of performance work that my partner and I carry out as a company called Plan B. If it is a daily practice, it has to be something I can do wherever I go and whatever else I'm doing. But this is a rather artificial way of talking about it. It makes it sound like I was searching for something that fit those concerns, which I wasn't. I can say, though, that I get a real sense of productivity when I have a GPS signal when I'm sitting on the bus going somewhere. Before we go on, I think I really have to tell you what it is I do and why I started to do it. In 2001, in 2000, I made my first trip to Berlin, where I now live. I was kind of looking to live somewhere else, and my partner Sophia introduced me to that city. And she'd been there completely by accident as the wall came down in November 1989. So it's a city that she felt rather bonded to. And she showed me it. She took me there. Reckless Sleepers, which was a company I was involved in at the time, were doing a gig in Hildesheim. And we got on the train and went to Berlin. And I was very much struck with a city that still had sufficient gaps in it to feel like I could insert myself in it. It felt like a city that was very exciting because it didn't feel all finished, didn't feel like everything had been done and dusted. It felt like I could make some kind of impact in it. But I was kind of very, I felt very worried about making this huge move in my life. I was born and raised in London, and apart from the 3 years I spent in Nottingham studying, I had lived in London all my life, and all my stories that I like boring people with and all the anecdotes are kind of prompted by, quite a lot of them are prompted by London, about being there and things that happened to me, and kind of narrating the my life as I go through it. And I realised that also, my knowledge of London I'm fairly proud of. I'm quite good at getting around it. And I knew that I'd have to start again in this new city, so I felt very kind of worried about doing that. But what I realised was that Berlin was giving me opportunity of tracking myself or observing myself as I learnt about it, which is something that I was kind of very interested in. How do you learn about a city? How do you come to make those connections? I mean, I think a lot of us are probably aware of that feeling of being in a city that's got an underground system and using it to navigate. And that kind of being a little bit like a rabbit, where you kind of use these underground passages to kind of whiz across to another side of the city and then pop up this hole and then kind of hop around a bit and then kind of pop down into your warren and kind of... It sometimes takes years or months to really realise where that was. And you might kind of walk around the corner and think, oh my God, this is where it is. And the fact of kind of... That's what I mean about joining up. The fact of kind of putting your body... It's kind of important to me as someone who comes from performance that the kind of knowledge that I kind of value is having to put your body through somewhere. That a place like that never really feels joined up until you've kind of walked there, or you've kind of somehow made a series of connections to that place, and then you kind of feel you know where it is. But if it remains somewhere that you only ever travelled to underground, it kind of floats in a strange no place for a while. The animation that I'm playing behind me is the tracks that I collected in 2005. Now, I began in 2003 to walk around with a GPS. And I turn it on whenever I'm out. So I've got it on now just to tell me the time, but it's not actually going to function in this concrete building very well. So I don't track myself indoors, although if I could, I would. I mean, I'm kind of equally interested in the kind of marks I'm making going around my house as going around a city, but I don't quite have the technology yet to kind of track myself to that extent. So basically, I take a GPS with me wherever I go, and I turn it on whenever I'm outside, and I collect these kind of marks. What I'm interested in, again, is really seeing what I'll do is I'll just show you how I came to be. So, this was where I first discovered a GPS. This was the Macro Lab, which was a project by a Croatian artist called Marko Pelian. And he kind of landed this strange pod in various odd... I think it's been in Australia, the Antarctic, and this was in Scotland, on the Blair Athol estate. And I was there helping a friend shoot rockets up into the mountains. And that was the first time someone had these kind of... this GPS lying around, and I thought, oh, that's really interesting. I'll turn it on and take it for one of the walks. And I realised that if you left it on, it would just start to draw a line for you of wherever you'd been. So I started to take it with me wherever I go. This is just outside King's Cross on a sunny day. That was the second GPS I ever had. These things are really built for kind of hikers and kind of fishermen and to kind of take with them into the wilderness, turn it on to kind of find out where they are, and usually turn it off again when they know where they are. It's not really meant for someone to take around with them every day, all day and every day. And so they tend to fall apart quite quickly. So I'm onto my third or fourth, I can't remember, and I've got a basement full of old ones that I sometimes dust off for old time's sake. When I'm kind of talking to people about this, there's a few kind of frequently asked questions, as they say in computer speak, that come up again and again. The first is, are you being tracked? And I say, well, yes, but you are too. I'm not being tracked by my GPS. The GPS simply receives information. It's taking a very weak, I think it's a radio signal. I'm not too sure where it is on the electromagnetic spectrum. But it's a very weak signal from a series of about 20 to 30 satellites that are in orbit around the Earth, put up there by the American military. But they just send out timing signals. They just send out the time. They talk to each other, and they talk to a place in Paris to find out what that time is, to within an infinitesimal amount, a degree. And basically this compares the timing differences between those satellites to find its position, and it just records that position. It doesn't then send anything anywhere else. I'm being tracked, like you all are, or potentially, by our mobile phones, credit cards, Oyster cards, all that kind of stuff. So, yes, I'm being tracked is the short answer. but not by this. Another thing that people ask me is, okay, so you're making drawings of wherever you go, then do you kind of write something into them, or do you look at your map and go, oh, I haven't been there, shall I go there? And I have to say, taken on face value, I try not to do that, because my practice is about trying to observe myself do my daily life. So I try not to make special journeys just because they're in blank places on the map. However, there's another question kind of hidden in that one, I think, that I can't deny, and that's, if you're taking a bloody great big thing around you every time, I mean, it's not so bad in the winter because you can stick it in a jacket, or you've got, but in the summer, this is quite a pain to kind of remember to carry around with you, remember to turn on, remember not to leave it on the bus. I've got basically this little rubber suction is so that I don't have to hold it on the train or the window when I'm on the train. So I tend to stick it on the window, on the train window, remembering to get off with it on every train I'm on and every bus I'm on. Having a pocket full of batteries that are charged up so that when the batteries go down, basically what I'm saying is that actually I can't forget I'm doing this. And it does change how I behave, of course. And I wouldn't want to kind of somehow dumb myself down, pretend I'm not doing it. So, and it's very difficult to make myself the control, you know, like, what would I be doing had I not been doing this? It's kind of an impossible question. So, yes, it does change how I behave. I try not to make it so that I'm making journeys just to get a good mark on the GPS. But when I started doing it, and still now, if you're in an urban environment and you're using a GPS, you start to develop a sense of where you're going to get coverage. And I tend to walk down the curb of the pavement, because if you kind of are in the shadow of the building, that means that you can't see the satellites on that side. So I tend to kind of hover down the curb, much to the annoyance of kind of parking wardens and stuff. So it does change my practice. You know, I can't pretend that that's... And I kind of think, oh, good, I'm being recorded. Oh, bugger, I'm not getting this journey, and it's quite a good one because I don't do it every day. This comes up a lot, which is puzzling to me, because I'm not the kind of person that... I don't have affairs. But I think kind of buried within that is like this idea of, does your partner then... Is your partner able... It's kind of related to the tracking question, I guess. Is your partner able to see where you're going? And it's, in a sense, she is, but I kind of collect the data at the end of every month or so, and then produce maps. And so she could find out where I'm going, but I mean, I'd tell her. I'm not the kind of person that has affairs. So yes, I don't think I could have an affair. At least I'd have to make sure that I was having an affair in a kind of fairly innocent place. I'd probably have to do it in my studio or something, so that I could cover my traces a bit. How do I show these? So I'm collecting, basically. These tracks get recorded on this periodically, depending on how much journeying I'm doing. I have to download it. It's got a limited memory. If I'm doing a lot of travelling, I have to do it about every three or four days. But at home, when I'm just taking my daughter to kindergarten and back, it's like 2 weeks I can go without having to download it. I have to download the tracks and then change the kind of... I won't go into the technical details of it, but basically it ends up on a program called AutoCAD. I'm just going to show you how it kind of ends up. Basically, it all gets... This is a rather ugly program because I haven't really found a good way of visualizing all of it. So that's Berlin from 2003 till now. But what you can do is start to zoom out and see that I don't just... Initially, it was about watching myself join up Berlin, but I couldn't stop doing it. Or rather, I didn't want to stop doing it, so I just keep it on kind of wherever I'm going. So you see, I mean, what I like is when I'm going across the country with either a train that allows me to pick up the GPS signal, or in a car. Now, a lot of modern trains, I'm sad to say, have now got something in their windows which blocks the GPS signal. So quite a lot of the journeys I'm now making are untraceable by me. So I have to do this very laborious thing of working out how much distance that was I travelled and somehow keeping track of that. But that's kind of another point. But you can see that I've been doing it sufficiently long enough that I am starting to kind of join some of these. This was a rather exciting TGV journey up France, which was great. And of course the East Coast main line from London to Edinburgh is still a good one to do. And also the older ones from London to Bristol, that's still quite good. The old intercity trains, they're fine. I'll just show you everywhere. I've only got the outlines to Europe, as you see. I just downloaded the grey outlines of the countries to Europe. But over, this is Canada. This is Calgary and Banff, where I was in November. This is San Francisco. This is New York. That's Tokyo. This is Sydney and Perth. And I think that's walking around the rooftop of... If you fly via Singapore, you can get out and go around the Cactus Garden and it's open to the air. So I turned the GPS on and got like a kind of 5-metre radius walk in the middle of Singapore, which is all Singapore is to me, unfortunately. So... What does this then produce? How do I show all this stuff? Well, to a certain extent, and I'll talk about this in a second, I'm kind of making an archive first, and the outcomes of it are kind of the artwork. It's kind of a little bit the wrong way around. This is an exhibition. I tend to show things in exhibitions or make performances where I talk about them, but this is a kind of an example. I present them as kind of a large prints of individual years of a certain place, and I call them things like 1 year drawing Berlin 2005, something like that. And then here you can see that there's also the animation that I showed you in the beginning, that was playing as part of this exhibition. So there's an idea that these artworks, I'm kind of very interested in the idea that these are not static artworks. They take time to do, and they're a snapshot of a certain process. So this is going to be ongoing. And it's important to me to also have these kind of animations going on so that you can see that that's... It's a process. It's a process that takes time and it takes distance. I'm just going to whiz through these. This is the kind of thing. I'm quite pleased the way they turn out. They inkjet printers are amazing these days, and I get them printed out on very good quality archival paper with good inks and stuff. And they look like etchings. The black lines are very kind of sooty black, and the pixels are so fine, you know, that they look like a kind of hand drawn or etched line. This was an exhibition I was in where I wasn't actually around for the exhibition in Berlin. I was in Aberdeen and Manchester and all sorts of places, but I sent every day. I sent back the map of that day, and then it slowly filled that wall with little little drawings that don't document that well, as you can see. This was another way of talking about the fact that this is a drawing that is growing every day of the exhibition that this was part of. I modified, you can see that there's a little extension, because I went to IKEA during the time that I was in the exhibition, and I had to kind of add to my map, so I just printed out the A4 sections of it and just kind of added to it. This is Berlin. As you can see, it's quite dense. What I didn't really reckon on when I started to think about logging where I was going was the amount of times I'd been there and what the GPS does, because it's not as accurate as you might like to think it is. When you're going up and down a road a lot of times, it starts to spread that line, so the lines get very much thicker. So I've lived in three places in Berlin: here, here, and here. And you can see that these journeys that I'm making every day around my home make the... If you overlaid that on the map of Berlin, you'd see that that was way outside the road. It's getting thicker and thicker and thicker because of the inaccuracy of the GPS. And that's kind of being quite eloquent about the amount of times that I do that journey. Whereas this journey is a one-off, as is... a good one somewhere. This is a one-off journey where we bought a bed for my daughter on eBay and went and collected it in a very strange place I wouldn't normally go to. And then once we got lost driving to Hamburg, and that's that kind of line up there. So there's a way in which that's quite interesting to me, because there's a funny way in which it is about memory and usage, in the way that you cease looking at the street that you go down every day, whereas you're kind of quite aware of walking down a new street that you're doing for the first time. And in a sense, I could probably tell you more or less when that was, but obviously I can't start to unpick this line because it's just too frequent, something I did almost every day for a few years. So this, just out of interest, is Bristol. And you can see the telltale Queen's... I did a project in Queen Square, so I kind of mapped it out quite nicely. Yes, just quite briefly, I just wanted to get back to this kind of whole data thing, because... and I've written something about this. As Julian rightly pointed out when inviting me to speak today, there is something backwards about the archive that I am building. I'll do that. Most artworks are produced and then documented, and it is these documents, generally speaking, that form archives. My archive is the collection of GPS tracks here on my computer. They are made first, and the artwork or artworks are extractions or manifestations of this archive, as you've seen. I'm very interested in this archival aspect of the work, especially as it is necessary to point to time and space in order to understand the drawings as I present them. I like presenting the maps in the very reduced ways you have seen, as simple black lines on white ground, or white pixels on a black background in the case of animations. One of the ways I have begun to do this is to entitle the drawing something like One Year Drawing Berlin 2007. I am interested in the understanding of this drawing as the record of a duration in time and space. As I am writing this, snow has covered the streets of Berlin outside my studio, and it is to this metaphor that I enjoy returning. Like footsteps in the snow, the drawings record presence, absence, and duration. They are white where I have not gone, and they are black, thick black where I have gone over and over again during the course of the years I have been doing this. In the practice of everyday life, de Certeau says, the ordinary practitioners of the city live down below the thresholds at which visibility begins. They walk, an elementary form of this experience of the city. They are walkers, Wandersmänner, whose bodies follow the thick and thins of an urban text they write without being able to read it. I find this a kind of very provocative statement, and a very inspiring one. Looking down like a dizzy god on all those ignorant ants is not a perspective that everyone can have, since what kept de Certeau aloft, seeing Manhattan from the 110th floor of the World Trade Center, was destroyed in front of our square eyes on that September the 11th. Perhaps it's an attempt to shake a fist at that omnipotent eye that I began to try to make sense of my own illiterate wanderings across an increasingly Google Earth that can now be rolled under our curses like a blue marble, to be the readers of our own urban text. What happens when you do this for a while is that you realise that this is not like a text at all. Your handwriting is constrained by the city's streets. You can't write what you want. We've come to think of this now as a rubbing. In the same way as rubbing a tombstone is a record of time and proximity to the stone, our marks recorded across a city and across thousands of hours of time ultimately reveal the shape of those streets and reveal a recognisable city layout. A rough rubbing that is affected by the shadows of buildings and GPS inaccuracies. We are in the lap of the satellites now. You might have noticed that I begun to talk about we instead of I, and that is because since 2007 my partner Sophia has joined me in this daily collection of journeys, and is, as we speak, if she is outside, tracking her movements with a GPS. Yes, we're a little bit late, but half an hour ago she was taking our daughter to Kita, so she would have made a mark then. Last year we took a part in an exhibition together in Aberdeen where we showed two Berlin prints side by side and showed the animations of both our lines during our journeys for the year leading up to the exhibition. This is, what I'm showing now is a close-up of where we live now. And on the right, on this side is Soph's version of that, and this is my version of that. We live here. And this is where our daughter goes to kindergarten. So you see this is a very well-trodden path indeed. And you can see that they're pretty much the same, but not quite. And then we did, it's kind of difficult to see because of the red, but basically we had an animation made for us, which played our tracks side by side. And the challenge there that it wasn't just Berlin. It had to cope with the fact that maybe when Soph was in Berlin, I'd gone to Nottingham, or even more exotically, Yokohama. And what was nice was that as it played, you saw that because of the time difference, I was kind of walking around in Soph's sleep, and she was kind of walking around in my sleep. In closing, I would briefly raise another archiving issue. This, by the way, is... I recently went through all our tracks, all our journeys, and kind of made a chart of how much travelling we do, which is a very un-PC thing to do, because you realise how big your carbon footprint is as an artist, and how little you're kind of earning to make that impact on the environment. However, I'd like to say in my defence that we recently did a kind of carbon footprint calculator, and we come in under the national average because neither of us own a car. But you can see, this is the amount of kilometres we're flying this is last year. And Soph and I are actually kind of circumnavigating the world pretty much in the course of our professional lives. This peak on the graph here, this is a flight to Canada that we made in November, so that's that one. Another archiving issue that affects us, and I was perhaps stupidly surprised that actually this is not as uncommon as I thought. Sophia and Sophia and I were starting to get together 9 years ago now. And it was the first relationship that I kind of started to negotiate partly through mobile phone, partly through texting. It was the first mobile phone I had, and this was the first relationship that is kind of, you know, I started to send text messages to Soph. Due to both of our sentimental and hoarding natures, we have to deal with the problem of how to save those precious messages. In the early days, Soph scanned her phone on a scanner. But since 2007, we have consciously and rigorously saved every text message we send each other. And I have made a database in order to do that. This database has to be manually updated, however. As far as I know, there isn't a method for automatically retrieving those messages from your phone through a connection to a computer. But there would be a great demand for that, I think, if anyone's has the computing knowledge to do that and wants to start up an application, that would be a very good one to do. I wonder, with the advent of the digital age, in which more and more people have giga and terabytes of music, video and images saved on our hard drives, and the current relative difficulty of getting this data out in any other form, whether archiving and being able to deal with an archive is actually an issue that is moving out of the academic or public archives and into our homes and everyday lives. I think the reason that Soph and I are interested in text messages, again, it maps proximity and nearness in another way, so that our texts to each other immediately reveal distance. They're very different if we're around the corner, like, can you pick up some milk? Or if we're far apart and trying to navigate in this section, we're kind of trying. Soph's coming back from being away, and I'm looking after our daughter. And they really do kind of quite closely map that proximity and distance in a very different way that the maps do. So I'm interested in the next thing we want to do is to show, in some way, visualize the GPS data and then place these. The other fantastic thing about them is that they're time and date stamped. So. Because we're recording wherever we go, you could say when and where we were when we sent these. Anyway, that's about it. Thank you very much.
Was there an existing map template upon which you were positioning your tricks? Or did all of those lines originate from your tracks?
Yes, all of the lines originate from my tracks. Yeah. So it's just I start with a white.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you can increasingly, with kind of tools available to you on the internet, overlay those tracks on existing maps and satellite terrain, but I tend to
avoid that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I want to check where I've been, I kind of look at it myself, but when I'm kind of exhibiting the things, I'm kind of quite interested in the abstraction. And what's interesting about it is that at first I thought, who's going to be interested in this? And is anyone going to be kind of, are they legible in any way? And I found out quite quickly that people are quite interested, and they are legible. So, I mean, Berlin makes a very kind of recognisable shape.
Icon.
Yeah. And to a certain extent, if you're told by the title that it's London, you start to then decode it in terms of that. I mean, Manhattan, unfortunately, is really appalling for GPS because of the kind of tall buildings and narrow, relatively narrow streets.
As a drawing, it's very ugly.
Yeah, it's not good at all. It's very kind of bitty, and it tends to kind of... It has to, the buildings being tall and flat-faced kind of reflect the image a lot.
Mm.
So you get very kind of poor, so basically this is Newark Airport. Manhattan is kind of doing this. This was a ferry ride to Staten Island, and this was where we were staying in Brooklyn and Williamsburg. But you can see, if I zoom into Manhattan itself, it's really pretty paltry kind of coverage.
Mm.
This was kind of around Washington Square, which was much better because it was more open. But as soon as you get uptown, really rubbish. Terrible city.
I think it's very interesting what you were saying in a way about producing the document in a way as the first phase of the art making process. In a sense, you are the last workshop was around digitization and remediation, making digital copies of artworks. And in a way, you're producing a digital record, digitizing your everyday movements through the city. Mm. And then you're remediating that or selecting from that archive,
yeah,
remediating that into wall-based drawings,
yeah,
objects.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not digitizing anything. Well, I guess the point of digitization is taking the GPS around, yeah.
So you're digitizing the drawings you're making on the screen.
I'm digitizing my movement, I guess. Yeah.
And then, in a way, it raises a question of, two questions. Firstly, where is the artwork?
Mm.
And is the artwork, as in, say, Teixeira Cia's work, is the artwork the duration of this whole record making, i.e. your life? Or is the artwork the wall-based drawings, for example, or the animations? And then it raises the question of how you conserve that artwork, and what would you conserve? Would you conserve this digital record that's currently held on your laptop, or would you instead conserve the artworks that you've selected and produced from?
I mean, if that is a question that I would respond to, then what I'm concerned about is conserving the original GPS data, because from that flows a number of outcomes, of which I don't feel like I've even begun to explore the possibilities of. So in a way, for me, that's the source from which other things can be generated. And in a way, yes, the like you identified, the kind of the outcomes are then generated from that material, rather than, you know, yeah, basically what I said about the kind of archive coming first, in a sense. And that's the thing I'm concerned to keep. Luckily, GPS data is not like video data or something. It's quite small, so I'm not getting into problems that other people are meeting of like massive kind of like terabytes of storage space needed. It's very neat data. It just says at this time and at this date you were longitude, latitude and elevation. That's all it says. So it's kind of fantastic data. And yeah, as well as kind of mark data, it's actually diary data, it's like schedule data. It's like it's kind of putting me at a place at a certain time. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what the things that I'm facing are. What are the operating systems in the future that can be able to read this data? That kind of thing is starting to become more of an issue to me. Yeah, so I'm thinking about that a lot.
Lots of things that I want to ask you, but one thing that just struck me is the gendering of this idea of the wall. Is that this thing of the flanner? I kind of really like the way you said, well, I'm not the type to have the affair, or if I did, I'd have it in the obvious place, or well, it couldn't be detected. But it was a bit like, are you the bug under your own lens? And if I think of the Jareve, it's sort of it differs greatly from that. And this of the flaneur and the kind of situations, Jareve seem to be much more masculine. And then a lot of your stories are very connected, like to the daughter's kindergarten or the bed from eBay some sorts of trips, even to IKEA or Lost, that quite often get accused of being sort of feminine or personal or kind of, in a way, a waste of other people's time to hear, because they're not like bigger or pointing outwards. And I was really kind of quite relieved that this this walking, you know, is kind of without the overwhelming maybe masculine thrust of previous examples. And I did happen to notice that the journey to the Kita was much darker in your map. So you obviously go to the kindergarten more than your partner, which is also really... But I was wondering, I mean, you know, because of technology, and I was very fascinated also by when you said the GPS signal won't come through certain windows. So are you actually operating on those train journeys in a window of opportunity? You know, that will actually, like your decaying tape, be over, will be, you know, quite, you know, a new thing, that'll be new history in quite a short space of time.
God, I hope not, yeah. But
yeah, but it
could happen.
Raises
yeah.
interesting, but I was just wondering about this sort of gendering of this, because obviously technology is often given to the masculine. I mean, clearly I'm using these terms without, you know, total belief, but...
Yeah, I wish Soph was here, but because she would maybe. Yes.
So you faked your map.
No, she would just kind of say what it's like about to be the partner of someone who's kind of quite into the technology and has kind of. Although I didn't force it on her. I mean, she wanted to. You know, I didn't say, "Here's a GPS, now take this with you every day." But I tend to be the one that kind of manages all that. I tend to be the one that makes sure that her GPS is functioning, which I rather spectacularly cocked up the other day. So I kind of lost a bit of January, I think. But
sorry to jump in there, but yeah. It strikes me that the stories, the anecdotes that you're telling us are very much within the talk, whereas if you look at the drawings which are displayed in the exhibition, it very much moves into the aesthetic.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, of the drawing, where all the stories are removed in a way they're degenderified.
Well, yes.
You can say that
thank
again,
you for
you know.
Making that one, because that is obviously the name that one aspect, especially the text. And that's the question about the bug under lens. I mean, if you're going to use the text, the editing or the selection is quite interesting.
We don't do any editing or selecting. We recently did a performance in Finland where we were in a sports stadium, like a football ground in the middle and a running track around, and then over opposite kind of benches we shouted a year's worth of text messages to each other. And it's kind of important with all these things for us anyway that we don't select out, we don't do the best of. We do them all, the ones that are badly spelt, the ones where, you know, it's a bit too kind of intimate to really be shouting across a football stadium. But hey, you know, kind of. I mean, partly because I think, in a way, I think I'm quite convinced that the more you reveal, the more kind of intimate you get, or more detailed perhaps that you get, the more people start to go, oh my God, that really rings a bell, or that really, you know. Oh Christ, I do that too, or something. You know, like weirdly, the more kind of into your own life you get, the more kind of connections you make. Well, that's what I found in my work as well.
So this is very mundane.
Yeah.
Question I'm going to ask, and it leads on from after the discussion about the gendering. How did Sophie come to start using? GPS, was it like she got kind of obsessed by your kind of obsession, if that's what it is, or I mean, how did it
yeah
happen?
I wish she was here, because I'd like to know too, actually. Because I think she just one day said, listen, shall I start doing it as well, kind of. And that was like last Christmas or something, so we started in 2007 January, Christmas before last.
So it's quite romantic.
Yeah, in a way, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, because we're starting to really make quite a lot of work about, well, we always have, about kind of being a couple. You know, I mean, we made a, just about our lives, I suppose, and kind of exposing that as a way of kind of finding something to kind of present to people. We make a show where we have a give ourselves half an hour each, so an hour in total to tell each other everything we've got left to tell each other, as if it was the last conversation we were having. So and we only let ourselves do that once a year, because it's just a terribly intense thing to kind of try and do, regulated by a chess clock. So we're quite kind of, that's something that we've done quite a lot, is kind of really expose kind of what we're about and what we do. And I think that the GPS is really an extension of that. It's really kind of saying, look, this is where we go. It's mostly together, but sometimes it's not, and it hurts when it's not together. And, you know, there's this other kind of, what we strive to do is try and put the stories back in somehow. But either by reading out the text messages or having them playing as an acoustic thing, or trying to put those human things back into these, perhaps over aesthetics. I mean, I happen to really like the aesthetics of the drawing, but they do lack the human story. And I kind of, when we're doing those kind of things, I've rarely kind of exhibited them just on their own without anything else going on. So quite often there'll be like a record that you can listen to all our text messages, or you can, there are videos which kind of go a little bit more into the kind of human detail of that, the human background of those.
Doesn't that throw up questions to whether what we're looking at, when we look at the visual material, whether it's art or not?
Yeah.
Because you look at, are they records still?
Mm.
Once, you did say, when you were talking, that one of the things that happened when you had them printed, they began to look like etchings.
Mm.
And I'm just wondering now, what makes them an artwork as opposed to a record?
Mm.
What is the demarcation between, if there is one, between the idea of an archive, or if you like, the bureaucratization of life in a very specific way, which produces certain effects, which when reproduced in certain technologies become artworks.
Mm.
Who makes the assertion that they are artworks?
Mm.
You do.
Mm.
And if they're placed in a gallery, mm. certain gallerist mm. does, and someone may come in and say, what are these? Mm. Are they artworks, or are they records? Not just records, but are they records?
Mm.
There seems to me to be an issue there,
mm.
A kind of open space between these two
mm.
categorized activities.
Mm.
And I find myself feeling doubtful, in a way, about the assertion of art.
Mm.
I have no problems with the notion of documentation in relation to experience.
Mm.
But the question of the manipulation of the results becoming art is something that we've all kind of assumed has taken place, but I'm not sure that it has.
Mm.
I just want to ask the question.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you can persuade me that actually I'm looking at art.
Yeah,
and that question came up in my mind in relation to you saying, well, you know, the human element of this is missing, and something I have to think about, because as you pointed out, you know, the actual discussion around everything that takes place is all about everyday life
mm.
and human life
mm.
and in a kind of lateral way, in the way you described it. What we finally see, or at least I haven't seen the work before, so I'm only looking at what you presented this
mm.
morning,
mm.
are these rather ambiguous signs.
Yeah. I mean, rarely do you see those alone, I have to say. Rarely do you only see those. Quite often they are in conjunction with all our text messages or videos that go into that. I don't think I've ever just exhibited the maps without much kind of other stuff to kind of really put that into some kind of thing. And to tell you the truth, and to be completely honest, I feel like I'm at the... Even though I've been doing it since 2003, and some people might say that's quite a long time, I'm such a slow worker, it takes me so long to realise what I'm doing, in a way. that I don't know if I can really properly answer your question about is it art or not.
I'm not sure it's answerable.
Yeah, yes.
Like the presentations, your archive, it seems to me that the display is an archive.
Mm.
The practice is cartography.
Yeah.
Can I just add that it's an interesting kind of cartography because you were talking about, did you mention Google Earth?
Yes.
And I was thinking about those everyday things you mentioned, those everyday bureaucratic things like Tesco cards or Google Earth. And Google Earth is very Cartesian, it's kind of old-fashioned in a sense. You zoom in, you get a set of powers, you zoom down the world. And although it is actually every photograph that's kind of satellite image that's in the montage there is presented as it exists in one time.
Yeah.
It's only when you zoom in on your own house and realise that's not your car park, that's something that's before you moved in or something. You know, that you realise that it's a different time, whereas what you're doing is kind of anti-Cartesian in the sense that I thought you said, because there is that sense of the time, it keeps drawing the lines thicker and thicker because you've been used so many times. And also, like if in Tesco's, for example, if you buy bean sprouts or something, it becomes, you are a bean sprout liking person.
Yeah.
Like you're now a niche market, you know. Then they can send you stuff to encourage you to buy whatever bean sprout liking people also like, miso soup or something.
Mm.
So there's that sense of a timelessness about those things, even though they're done in real time. There's a sense of kind of frozen categories, and that we're supposed to perceive it as essentials as not taking place in time, whereas the animations and also the drawings, you get that sense of that there's it looks like a map, it resembles a map, but it's not quite a map because it's a record of time passing.
Yeah, for me they're very mortal too. I mean, I think it's almost like prompted by the idea that you could look back on your life as a single moment. Like, that's what a map lets you do. It lets you look at experience a place as if you could have it all at once. It's kind of a record of, you can't experience Berlin all at once like that because you have to put your body through the streets over time. And I'm quite interested in that tension that the map, that any map has between, you know, the possibility that it seems to offer of kind of like, wow, yes, I'm here and I can kind of encompass this whole place all at once. And a kind of rather kind of like, perhaps a more mortal kind of notion of, God, that's where I went in my life. Which is maybe the same thing or maybe two ends of a telescope, or I'm not sure, but I do think of it quite mortally in that sense of like, you know, if you could see windows.
But that thing about the tracks, that when you're saying you and your partner make every year that sort of ritual of the half an hour of what you have to say, and this idea of encapsulating journeys, one of the sort of aspects of the poetry of what it seems you do, and it's kind of is very much about sort of this like preparation.
Setting things in order before.
Yes, but also to have something that nobody can really have, which is the cumulative. And I suppose when people talk about any relationships, then they do sometimes talk about going on journeys or journeys together, or you know, Brock and Picasso talked to themselves in their sort of fellow mountaineers, I believe. What was it? Rock climbers kind of
rope to each other.
Yes. And I think that's very interesting, the symbiosis, and when you talk about sleeping in each other's nights, that's sort of quite a curious thing to share as well.
Is it okay, one more question?
Yeah.
And then I think we're going to have to move on.
It wasn't really a question, it was more of a comment, and I think you were kind of saying something very similar, but what I was very taken with was the sense of that this was quite a poetic and aesthetic cartography of affect, attachment and intention, that's what we're seeing. And even that sense of those journeys, that tension to taking your daughter to kindergarten over time, like eventually that spot in the map will just disappear. But yet you'll have a record of that the quotidian, the mundane attention in order to do that kind of active caring. So I thought the affective was very present, even in the abstraction of the kind of heavily scored lines.
Mm.
So I just wanted to say that that's what I took from the work.
Thank you.
I'm really interested, I mean, the point you made when you said you don't like to make a selection or, you know, devil's in detail. But I also realised that, for me, one of the most interesting maps is the unhappy map because of the gaps and where the GPS is actually, in effect, selected for you because it's failed. And so I guess my question is, do you know when it's, does it tell you it's failed? Do you know
yes.
Yeah.
It says I don't have GPS reception.
You have to check it.
You have to look at it, yeah. And it doesn't draw, you know, then when I download, if I'm not looking at it at the time, then when I download the track, I'll see that there's a gap and I've jumped from one place to another.
So in a way, it's, you know, as a live art curator, I'm really, I'd be most interested
in the gaps.
Yeah, you know, how do you then document an archive the gaps?
Yeah.
Because you have somewhere there that kind of.
Well, I mean, so far I've just been like rather mundanely kind of totting up, trying to work out how far those distances are that I haven't got. But I have to say, I can't do that for all the, you know, the little things, like if I go out of reception walking down the road. It's more like if I travelled to Nottingham on a train that didn't let me get the GPS reception, then I would have to put that back into the archive somehow, but yeah.
There's something else, I think, which is the word Berlin is not a neutral word, is
no,
it?
No, no,
it's immensely rich in terms of its what it what it can represent.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, because we, you know, all of us have different sense of history maybe about a place. I also lived in Berlin, and I can, and I have a sense of, you know, where if everything is actually limited to the personal and the domestic, it could be anywhere. It just so happens that it happens to be Berlin that you've chosen, and there's no other information. On the other hand, you know, what you're doing, the place you're doing it in, is absolutely rife with historical significance, just like any other place, really, like here. And I'm just wondering if you have any comments.
Yeah, I do. I think that it really, that was kind of part of the prompt, was this frustration I had of knowing a lot about London, knowing, I mean, you know, there are 8 metres of man-made earth in the middle of London, which means that that's an awful lot of history to deal with. And I knew that I was going to an equally rich place, but I was frustrated that I was arriving there as a kind of virgin, or someone ignorant of that. And I think a lot of my work is prompted by that kind of fear and longing, in a way, of like walking down a place thinking, my God, the stories that these places could tell if only they could suddenly speak to me. So yes, it very much was a kind of like a, oh my God, I'm going to somewhere new. Oh my God, it's Berlin. Oh my God, I know nothing about it. Yeah, subsequently, you know, I take your point that, in a way, it could be anywhere. But I don't think it would have... I wonder if it would have started in another city, this whole practice. Because of, it really turned up the volume on that very thing of, like, God, this is a place where I'm just coming to, and it's a place with so much resonating through it. And now I can kind of walk all over it, you know, in a way that I wasn't able to do 20 years ago even. So, yeah, no, I think it is it had a big impact. It had a very big impact.
I have to stop there, because we need to do a changeover so that Jonathan can get his computer set up. Let's just thank you again, Dan, for your support.